I'm Gene Basale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years, which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. Before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have comments or questions, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, April 27th. On this day in 4977 BC, the universe was created. At least according to German mathematician astronomer Johannes Kepler, he was a bit off in his projections, about 13 billion years, according to modern astronomers, but his contributions in the field, including his laws of planetary motion, are today considered critically important to understanding the solar system and how it works. In 1773, the British Parliament passes the Tea Act, which on its surface appeared to be a good thing for American colonists, offering tea at lower prices due to reduced taxes paid to England. However, Americans were unimpressed and saw the move as a subtle way of granting an unending monopoly to British tea merchants, who would have control over the precious resource supplied to the colonies. And in 1805, U.S. Marines defeated a force siding with the Barbary pirates in the North African port city of Tripoli. American land troops were supported by firepower from the USS Argus and the USS Hornet, which eventually defeated the Libyan rebels who had harassed and kidnapped U.S. sailors for years in what were called the Barbary Wars. The bravery of Marines during the entire campaign was later captured in their fight song in the phrase, "To the Shores of Tripoli." Many people assume that highly renowned businessmen focus almost exclusively on one thing, the success of their business. Yet some of our nation's great industrialists have aggressively pursued hobbies, one being the preservation of scenery near Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. After the turn of the 20th century, the famous entrepreneur Pierre DuPont purchased a local farm to save an old grove of trees for posterity, spawning a passion for horticulture which evolved into our nation's most beloved floral sanctuary, Longwood Gardens. The land that eventually became the gardens was owned by George Pierce, who'd purchased the tract of 402 acres in the early 1700s, portions of which were given to his family. After Pierce's passing, his descendants eventually lost interest in preserving the property, which held dozens of varieties of trees from all around North America, Europe, and Asia. When the land was up for sale to a buyer who wanted to cut down all the trees for his sawmill, DuPont bought the property in 1906. Over the years, the area was greatly enhanced, with fountains, gazebos, walking paths, and a conservatory, all featuring thousands of varieties of flowers, shrubs, and trees. Travelers to the region know Longwood Gardens as a must-see destination. The site receives millions of visitors every year. Today we'll be talking with Colvin Randall, the DuPont Fellow tasked with writing about the gardens, their history, and the many features of the site. Colvin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Excuse me. What is your position there at Longwood Gardens, and describe your responsibilities?
Well, I've been here for 39 years. First, I was a student, and then in 1977, I came as a full-time employee, and I did public relations and publicity for 20-some years, and then I became the information manager. And since 2008, I've been the P.S. DuPont Fellow, which has allowed me to kind of do my own thing and do my own research and writing, and I've written several books. I'm finishing up a DVD tour of Longwood, and I also design the fountain displays.
Oh, excellent. And 39 years, that's a long time to be associated with the gardens. You've probably seen quite a few changes there.
Well, I've seen, yes, a lot of changes, and I've worked with four directors, so all of our directors since Mr. DuPont. So I've kind of had an overview in greater detail than most people.
Now, I did mention a little bit about the history of the formation of Longwood Gardens. I know that Pierre DuPont, I believe, died in the early 1950s, was it 53?
He died in 1954.
And, you know, I think his mission was basically stated in the scenery there, to preserve beautiful plants, trees, and shrubs, and offer a wonderful place to visitors. What is your description of the overall mission of Longwood Gardens?
Well, today we've spent quite a bit of time working on master planning and things like that, and our current mission statement is that Longwood Gardens is the living legacy of Pierre DuPont, inspiring people through excellence in garden design, horticulture, education, and the arts. So if you look at that statement, it kind of encompasses all that we do.
Mm-hmm. You know, for our visitors, or I should say our listeners, who haven't actually been to Longwood Gardens, who do love horticulture, love flowers and gardens, it is a superb place to visit. I happen to be an annual member, and I live in Kennett Square, so I'm there quite frequently. It's an absolutely wonderful place to visit and walk around and enjoy the scenery any time of year. You know, DuPont had a major impact on the various displays and the layout. Tell us your view of the actual impact he had from, let's say, the 30s to the 50s, and then a little bit about his lasting impact today.
Well, he bought the property in 1906. He laid out the first garden in 1907. And he had worked with a landscape architect at his mother's house down in Wilmington, and he wasn't impressed. So instead, he bought a couple garden books and learned by doing. And so the first thing he did was lay out a 600-foot-long flower garden walk, which we still have today, which is where currently the tulips are on display. And then he built an open-air theater, and then he built the conservatory, and then he started adding fountains. So he added the Italian water garden, and it all culminated in the main fountain garden between 1929 and 31. And that was the framework for Longwood upon which we've grown. And then by that time, it was during the Depression, he did not suffer, nor did the employees suffer during the Depression, but he didn't do much expansion. And then he was concerned about what is my legacy and what is going to happen to this place after he was gone, because he and Mrs. DuPont didn't have children. So he set up the Longwood Foundation, which was finally given permission by the government to continue Longwood as a not-for-profit garden open to the public. So when he died in 1954, within a year, the trustees, who were all of his nephews, had put a professional manager, Dr. Seibert, as Longwood's first director, and he established the sort of the guidelines of what Longwood was to do, which was basically what Mr. DuPont had wanted. It was to be a place open to the public, and it was to allow people to enjoy plants and flowers and gardens and to learn. So we have many educational programs as a result of that today.
Mm-hmm. How large is Longwood Gardens?
Currently, there are 1,077 acres. When he bought it, he bought 202 acres, and then over the next couple decades, he bought 25 contiguous properties until it was 900-some acres during his lifetime. But we've added to that, and we sort of have a protective green belt. Now it's 1,077 acres.
That is just enormous. I can tell you from personal experiences, you could walk around there forever. I mean, there are so many paths and gazebos to walk up to, and just the bell tower and so many wonderful places. Of course, the plants and the flowers are the kind of the highlight of the area. You mentioned the tulip walk, which is absolutely spectacular. So for our listeners, if you haven't seen Longwood Gardens this spring and you want to see some absolutely amazing tulips, go out there sometime soon and see the tulip walk. It's wonderful. Tell us a little bit more about the variety of plants and flowers you have there.
Well, we've got about 10 or 11,000 different types of plants. Of course, we have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of plants, but all of our plants are in a database. They're computerized. They have tags on them. You can actually go online to our plant finder, and you can actually find where certain plants are, or if you find a plant that doesn't have a name, you can probably key it out in our online service and figure out what that plant is. But we have everything from trees. Our tallest trees are more than 160 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Those are probably tulip poplars. Mm-hmm. We have all kinds of native trees, but as well we have exotic trees that have been brought in from around the world. The trees that the Pierces collected, trees that Mr. DuPont collected, and since that time we've planted many, many trees, thousands of trees. And then we have, of course, a whole variety of shrubs and lower, smaller plants, upon which then all the flowering plants, the perennials, the annuals, the biennials are added. We have, for instance, 500,000 tulips in the spring. And then in the summer, we have all the summer flowers and the trial gardens. And then in the fall, we have chrysanthemums, of course, ending with December's poinsettias. But then we keep right on, and in January we have, starting in January and February, March, we have our orchid extravaganza. So no matter when you come, you'll see something spectacular.
That is just incredible. How does Longwood Gardens compare with other major gardens or botanical collections around the world, let's say like the Pew Gardens in London?
Well, Longwood is very similar. We're not strictly a botanical garden. Our goal is not to have one of everything. Our goal is to have plants, both common and rare, that are beautifully grown and displayed. So it's our primary purpose is aesthetics. We just won I think it was US Today conducted a survey, a nationwide survey, where people could vote online for their favorite public garden, and Longwood won this year. So that was
nice.
And compared to places like Kew in England, again, they're a botanical garden. They have display things, but their primary purpose is the scientific collection and preservation of plant material from around the world. And we do that, but again, our primary purpose is the aesthetic display. So we're a horticultural display garden versus a strictly botanical garden.
Mm-hmm. I know I mentioned this in passing, but exactly how many visitors did you get there last year? Do you have a number?
We have about, it's grown dramatically in the past several years. Last year we had 1.3 million, so that was a new record for us.
That is amazing. Do you get many school groups?
We get lots of school groups, and in fact, we get like 15,000 students a year, and those are the ones who visit us on site with their teachers. But then we also get about 9,000 students who learn about Longwood, who learn about plants through online classroom exchange. So their teacher can log into Longwood, and we will give a presentation for them online. We have a little studio here, and we can explore the wonders of the plant world. So the primary purpose of that is not it's to instruct them about the plants and botany and horticulture. It is not so much to tell them what Longwood is, and that's been very successful, and it allows people who can't necessarily get here all over the country to learn.
Very interesting. You know, I do know that you offer a variety of courses on plants and trees. In fact, my wife took several of those courses there and really enjoyed it. We're just about to take a short break here in a few seconds, but I just wanted to mention for our listeners, if you haven't seen the new Meadow Garden Path, which leads out to the historic Webb House, you absolutely have to visit it. It is much less crowded than the typical conservatory or other parts of the Longwood Gardens, and it is a wonderful place to take a stroll. It is just beautiful, and I'm sure it's even more beautiful in the fall. I think you call it the Meadow Garden Path now, and it leads out to this, I think it's almost a 300-year-old house. We will be talking about that after we take a commercial break. And again, we'll be back with Colvin Randall of Longwood Gardens right after this break. I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. We're talking with Colvin Randall of Longwood Gardens. Colvin, I briefly mentioned the new Meadow Garden Path Walk there at Longwood Gardens, which leads out to the historic Webb House. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, half of that property was our original wildflower and meadow garden, which was sort of open to the public in the 1960s. It had been agricultural land before that. And after many years of discussion, we finally, with the state of Pennsylvania's help, were Route 52, which went right through the property, was relocated to the east, and it allowed us to unify the two halves of the meadow. So what was 40-some acres is now 87 acres. And it opened in 2014, and Jonathan Alderson was hired. He's an ecological designer to lay out the pathways, and John Milner was retained to take the historic Webb House about 1730 and turn it into an interpretive center. So people can walk the entire length of the meadow. There's several miles of walks there. They go over both mowed paths and some very beautiful new bridges. And for people who can't feel that they can walk, there's also a little bus that will take them on paved roads over to the Webb Center. So the Webb House, you might choose to walk over and ride back or vice versa or do the whole thing on foot. But you get to see beautiful vistas, and it's just really a lovely experience that's very different from the usual Longwood experience, which is in some cases very formal. This is very informal, very natural, and parts of it, depending on where you are walking, kind of look like one of Andrew Wyeth's paintings, like Christina's World. It's just kind of a very beautiful, lovely, open Brandywine scene.
I agree completely. We were just there last weekend, and it was just lovely. The walk out to the Webb House, wonderful, very peaceful, very serene. The house itself is quite beautifully done. How much was involved in its restoration?
Well, I was in it years ago when it was still a residence, and I think John tried to choose, he didn't try to restore everything as a domestic house. It was made into an interpretive center, but they removed as many layers of changes that had been put in to get back to the original structure. And something else that's interesting about that property, that is the supposed that on the land, on the other side of Route 52 there, on the new part of the property that's now open to the public, is where Indian Hannah supposedly was born. And of course, she was the last of the Lenai Lenape Indians in history, and this was, of course, a couple hundred years ago. But nonetheless, she was supposedly born on that property, on the Webb property.
Interesting. Now they have the Indian Hannah marker, which used to be on Route 52, is right now next to the Chester County Visitor Center, so people can still see the marker. It's right next to the Visitor Center, and it's preserved. I understand that the gardens, Longwood Gardens, is now experiencing a major renovation project, which will likely take up into the year 2017. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the main fountain garden is one of our most popular, well-known outdoor features. You see it in all the publicity shots. It was built between 1929 and 31, and although it was rebuilt partially twice before, it had never really been given a complete overhaul. And so for 2.5 years now, we have been completely taking the garden apart, putting all the utilities and everything, that the piping for these fountains, underground in tunnels. There are more than 1,400 feet of tunnels. Previously, the piping was just in the ground, and when you sprung a leak, you had to go try to figure out where it was and dig up the garden. So now everything is underground and accessible. But the garden will look very similar to the way it was before. However, we've enhanced it greatly, particularly with new fountains. All the old fountains that were there are still, that will still be there, will be restored with new pumps. But then we have many new types of fountains that will add a lot of entertainment value to the display. For instance, there are basket weaves. These are in front of the conservatory, there's a canal. There are two canals, and they have all these Italian stonework enclosures in them. And inside of these, there will be basket weaves that look almost like baskets. And there will also be spinning jets that you can control both the height and the direction and the speed of how the jets spin. And then we have nozzles that move in an east to west axis with motorized controllers, and other nozzles that move both east and west, north and south. So that gives you 360 degrees worth of rotation. And then we have air jets, like you may have seen at Bellagio, where they don't really use pumps. They use compressed air that goes pow, and the jet explodes upwards. And then lastly, and most interestingly, we have 30 flame nozzles. And these are in the canals closest to the conservatory. When the command is given, the column of water ignites, and a flame flows up the jet to the very top where it remains lit as long as we want, and that'll look almost like birthday candles. And so that's, and this is true flames. These are real flames. This is a new technique that we discovered in Germany, and I'm not sure it's been used elsewhere in this country yet, but we're going to have 30 of these, which will add for very interesting displays, particularly when we don't have fireworks.
Oh, that's excellent. You know, I can tell our audience that the fountain displays are at Longwood are absolutely spectacular, especially when they have them lit up around the holidays. What are your favorite parts of the gardens?
Well, I like the fountains outdoors. The fountains, I think, was the whole reason that I was initially interested in Longwood Gardens, because I've always been interested in fountains, and Mr. DuPont was certainly one of the great fountain fanatics of last century. I mean, he created more fountains than anybody. Indoors, I like the central vista of the orangery, which is the first greenhouse. The central greenhouse, if you turn your back on the fountain garden and walk in the front door, that vista, to me, is very classic, and that says Longwood, as does the fountain garden, like no other shot at Longwood.
I know kids love tree houses, and if you haven't been to Longwood in quite a while, you may not know that there are several life-size tree houses now scattered around the gardens. Tell us about the construction of those. What was the thinking behind building those?
Well, the tree houses were built as a temporary exhibit several years ago, and the idea was they were only going to be up for a year or so, and they're made ecologically sound. They don't hurt the trees or anything like that, so there's a whole support system where they go in the ground. They don't disturb the roots, but they were so popular that it's been decided to keep them at least for the foreseeable future, and kids love them. They're actually much bigger than your typical treehouse might be at home, but we've had, occasionally we'll have a reception in one of them, which it's on a nice day. It's a beautiful place, the one by the lake you can look out, or the one in the meadow you can look out on the meadow. They're quite interesting, and people seem to really respond to them.
They're beautifully done. Our listeners may not know, if you haven't actually been up to the treehouse, they are literally full-sized houses, basically up in the tree, you know, or right next to the trees, and they're just wonderful places to take a look at the expanse of the gardens. You know, the Christmas light displays remain about my favorite at Longwood Gardens. Are there any plans to add to the Christmas displays?
Well, we review it each year, and I think we are adding some more lights. We have, I don't know, like a half million lights now. The Christmas display was extremely popular last year, this past Christmas, and both because of publicity and interest, and I think the weather was nice for the most part. And we had over 400,000 visitors just for Christmas, which was a new record. So we've gone to a time ticketing routine, which allows people to buy their tickets online and ensures that they'll get in once they get here, and we kind of can control the total number of people in the gardens at any one time to make it a more pleasurable experience.
Now, our listeners may not know that the Longwood Gardens has a regular concert series. I have personally seen the Kennett Square Symphony there in a concert which was absolutely phenomenal. I've been to some jazz shows there, which were also quite good. Tell us a little bit about your concert series.
Well, we have concerts year-round. In the winter, we have them indoors in the conservatory or in the ballroom. And in the summer, we have them out mostly in the open-air theater. This year, for instance, we are having the Kennett Symphony. We are having our usual ones, things like the Savoy Company and the Brandywiners are doing Shrek, I think it is. But we also have the Philadelphia Orchestra coming back this year. Unfortunately, several of the concerts are already sold out. And so, of course, all the summer listings are on the website. That's the easiest way to do it. And another tip would be, if you become a member at Longwood, you will get notification and an opportunity to buy tickets in advance before the general public sale. And so that's one way, if there's something you particularly want to see, that's one way of ensuring that you'll probably get to buy a ticket. But we've got jazz coming up. We've got all kinds of things. I mean, there's world music, jazz music. It's just an amazing assemblage of things. And also this June, we have an international organ competition, our second one. We had one 3 years years ago, every 3 years, we invite 10 semifinalists from around the world. And this year we have 7 from the United States, 1 from Australia, 1 from New Zealand, and 1 from France. And this has become quite the competition in the organ world, because the $40,000 first prize for the winner is the largest organ prize in the world. So there's a lot of interest in that.
Interesting. So for our listeners, if you have an interest in maybe going to one of the concerts, go onto their website, longwoodgardens.org, and I know you can see the listings there. I, as you mentioned, they do sell out pretty quickly. I can say from personal experience that the concerts are excellent. They're really wonderful. Tell us about any new projects or exhibits coming up in the next 6 to 9 months.
Well, the one of the things that people were fascinated by last year was Nightscapes, which were the projections on the plants as you walked around the gardens outside. And that's actually coming back in August and September and October, so with some changes. So I think people will be, a lot of people didn't get to see it, and I know we've had people call to say, well, you know, are you going to do it again? And yes, we are doing it again the second half of the summer. So it should be something that people would be very interested in. It's almost, for those of you who are old enough, it's almost like a psychedelic experience. that word isn't used much these days, but you're kind of seeing all these projections, and it's all done with mapping, digital mapping, and with music, too. So it's just kind of a very unique type experience. It's a little different than several years ago we had the Bruce Monroe lighting fixtures throughout the gardens, but it's the same idea, an after-dark experience. We also have a beer garden that this summer from on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We'll have concerts and selling beer and food outdoors. So that's a lot of fun.
Oh, that is excellent. By the way, for our listeners who may not know this, Colvin actually wrote at least a couple of books on Longwood Gardens. I think one is A Longwood Christmas, and the other, I think, is titled 100 Years of Longwood Gardens. You talk about the history. Both are excellent books, so if you really want to take home a keepsake from Longwood Gardens, those are ones that you want to take a look at. Longwood Gardens remains a favorite of visitors to this area. It is an outstanding place to visit. It's one of my personal favorites spots in the entire region to spend time at, and I usually get over there fairly often. I want to mention that we're just about to end our show, but Colvin, you've given us a great description of Longwood Gardens and all the various displays. People should just get out there and visit it. It's a great place to wander around on a beautiful sunny day. It is an absolutely wonderful place to just take a stroll. And I want to thank you, Colvin, for being on the show today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, May 4th, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, when we'll be speaking with Mark Scheffler of the American Helicopter Museum. Thank you all for joining us today for Living History.